Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
Like, you just see $100,000, $600,000
deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they sat me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you're going to jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out to Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up. Because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
The parents of the young American man beaten to death in Greece while on vacation are speaking for the first time in an interview that you'll see only on CBS This Morning. Makari Henderson was his name. He died.
Hey guys, I'm Jameson with RogueEngineer.com, and today I'm going to show you how I made this playhouse for my daughter Madison. If you decide to take on this project yourself, make sure you refer to the website for the full project plans, including the required tools, the materials list, and the assembly instructions. So a few weeks ago, PPG reached out to me and they asked if I could come up with a project to use their exterior paint on. I'm glad they chose the playhouse, not only because I love building stuff for my kids, but I love building stuff with my kids. I was able to get Braden involved with this, and we kind of made it the project that we're building this for Maddie. We're building Maddie's playhouse, and he just loved it. And it's so cool to see these guys working with their hands instead of sitting inside in front of the TV or on the iPad. As far as the playhouse goes, we decided to build a smaller version of the playhouse, which is about 8 feet long by about 6 to 7 feet wide. The joists for the structure are made out of 2x6 pressure-treated wood as well. And we went ahead and installed the handrail posts here because we wanted to secure them to the joists to make sure that we had a solid connection. We put skids on the bottom, 4x4 skids on the bottom, and that's going to allow for us to be able to move it. Next, we installed the decking, and for that we used 5/4 inch by 6 inch pressure treated decking. For some of these deck boards, we had to notch out with a jigsaw to work around the post, but it wasn't too hard. So for the base of the playhouse, we decided to go with pressure treated lumber, and that's just because that's going to come in contact with the ground, and we wanted to make sure that we were going to have something there that would be able to resist the elements. Here's where I thought I was better than pre-drilling and had a little snafu. Nothing a little wood glue won't fix. When I did that, I know that I'm supposed to pre-drill, but I didn't, and of course it cracked. I pre-drilled and screwed it in place. Then I laid the rest of the 5/4 decking down and secured it to the joists with 2.5 inch wood screws. And when we got to another post, we simply just notched it out again with a jigsaw. This time, not forgetting to pre-drill and then again secure the decking boards with 2.5-inch exterior wood screws. Now that we've got the structure built and the decking installed, we moved on to the sides. The sides were actually made out of untreated lumber because it's a little bit more cost effective, and we really didn't need pressure treated lumber since it's going to be sealed with exterior paint or some type of exterior element on all sides. It won't be exposed to those elements, so we didn't really need that extra layer of protection. Now that we've got all the walls assembled, we can start attaching them to the structure. You can also make sure that the walls are square by laying out a 3-4-5 triangle. If you don't know what it is, you can Google it and you'll be able to figure it out. Now that we've got the walls installed and everything is nice and square, it was time to install the siding. The walls might seem a little flimsy at this state, but the siding really just locks everything into place. For the siding, we opted to go with an inexpensive exterior paneling that kind of has a nice wood grain look to it. It was about 20 bucks a sheet, and it's really actually this pressed fiberboard. So now with all the exterior siding installed, we can go ahead and cut out the door and windows. I did so by drilling the holes first in the corners, marking the line on the outside, and then cutting out and trimming everything nice and smooth with a reciprocating saw. So now it's time to cut and install the rafters. The rafters are cut at 48 degrees, that's the pitch of our roof. Then you'll need to cut the bird's mouth. Mark the 2 points per the plans, then take a speed square, pivot along the first point, and then draw a line out to 2.5 inches. Cut the bird's mouth out with a circular saw, and then finish off the cut with a jigsaw. Then just use that cut to trace all the rest of your rafters. So we got built what we could inside and we were protected from the elements, but now it was time to drag it outside and start on the rafters and ridge plate. To install the ridge plate, what I did was I secured 2 2x4s as temporary supports to the walls. I found the center where the ridge plate was going to go, and then I screwed those 2x4s right beside it. One good thing to do before you hang the ridge plate is to mark where your rafters are going to go. It's a little bit easier to mark it on the ground versus marking it in the air. Now with the rafters all cut, you can install them to the ridge plate as well as in the wall plates. To do that, I've got all the dimensions that you need in the plans on the site. You can go there if you're going to tackle this project and look all those up. I'm not going to detail all that in the video. But you can just simply install those with 3-inch wood screws, and you can toe nail or toe screw the rafters to the wall plate. Now that the rafters are installed, it's time to install the wall support. The lengths of these boards aren't really critical. As long as you get them nice and vertical, they look nice. They're just there more to support the siding. I opted to install these with pocket hole screws just because I had a pocket hole jig and it makes it so much easier. And I was able to hide the screws behind the siding so you can't even see them from the inside. Now comes the fun part. With those supports in place, you can now install the siding or finish off the siding. I say this is the fun part because it's going to take you a couple times of putting the siding up and then marking it, making your lines, bringing it back down, cutting it with a circular saw, cutting out the notches with the jigsaw for the wall plate. There's a couple times that you're going to have to go back and forth. With the exterior paneling cut just right, we went ahead and installed it with 1 1/4 inch exterior wood screws. Now, depending on the roofing choice that you've made, we went with shingles, so we needed to hang sheathing. I used 19/32 of an inch plywood, just 4x8 sheets of that. If you have trouble getting everything square, it's probably because your rafters are a little bit out of square. Fix this by securing one side of the sheathing and then pulling the other side of the sheathing into place and securing that. For the top, you'll need to rip that down to the appropriate size to cover the rest of the rear. Jamie was eager to get paint on this project, and we didn't want to get any paint on the roofing, so we decided to go ahead and do that before we installed the shingles. While that exterior paneling that we chose was cheaper, the disadvantage to using it was that the inside was fiberboard and it soaked up a ton of paint. Now on to installing the shingles. We chose a 3-tab shingle instead of an architectural shingle, so we didn't have to buy a ridge in a huge long package. Now we headed up to Chelsea Lumber, our local hardware store, to pick out the exterior paint. We went with PPG's Manor Hall exterior paints. The guys at Chelsea Lumber were awesome. They helped us pick out all the supplies and paint that we needed, and now it's back to work on the playhouse. Jamie loves to accessorize, and this was no exception. She's a lot better at it than I am, of course, so I went ahead and let her do that. I decided to counterbore a 2-inch hole into the top plate that would accept the knot of the rope. After that, I followed up with a 1/2-inch hole all the way through the top.
Start with what you have. God proves people before he approves them. In Luke chapter 16 and verse 10, he that is faithful in that which is least, faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least, is unjust also in much. Yes, we all have fantastic dreams, visions, ideas. But to realize them, we must be ready to start with what we have, where we are. Yes, you have wonderful dreams. You have wonderful visions. But to realize those dreams and visions, you have to start with what you have where you are. Many are stagnated and stranded in life, business, and destiny because they want to start big. Start small, think big, and grow bigger. God believes in people who humble themselves to start small. In Zechariah chapter 4, verse 10, it says, who has despised the day of small things? Small things are often despised. What is starting small? Starting small simply means starting from where you are or with what you have. The problem with most people is that they feel they don't have what it takes to start. Wise man said, if you can think enough. Mentor said, if you can think enough, what you have in your hands is enough for you.
Welcome to the cabin project. This cabin took 8 months to build. It's 52 logs, and we started in the fall, built through the winter, and into the spring. I did this with a youth group from my church, and I have no previous construction experience. I just started doing a lot of research. Log cabins are something that really interests me, and just as I worked along, I learned as I went, and ended up with this. Anyways, the snow is still up around the cabin quite a bit. You can't really tell, but there are another three rows of logs underneath the door. You can start to see the first row underneath, but there's still two more rows underneath that. So when the snow goes away, this cabin's going to look a little taller. For the roof, I just used a heavy-duty tarp. It's a cheap and easy solution. We'll see how effective it is over the years. But of course, at any point, we can shingle the roof instead. For the notches on the logs, I just did a normal square notch. I didn't worry about doing a saddle notch or anything like that. It seems to be quite effective anyway, just doing the square notch. The construction of this cabin was made possible by a lot of help and a lot of donations from people. In fact, this door is a donated dining table that I ended up converting into this door. And I framed it with just some spare wood that I had on site.
Yeah. As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalava slum, in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just 4 toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's 3 daughters, 6-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a 2-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people.
Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
Everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33 years?
Yeah.
You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
Yes, this space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of you
sleep
in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room.
Mm-hmm.
You play in this room.
Mm-hmm.
You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded?
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here, my another sister over here, and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is.
Yeah.
And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, tell us ki mother work aayegi, maja family illa he karega.
Means he has a problem at that he cannot manage his salary enough for four people.
Yeah. This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
It was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
be familiar with Taobao, Chinese online shopping website and one of the largest e-commerce websites in the world. But do you know Taobao Village? Who are the merchants? What do they sell? And how do they sell? Now I'm in.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, for many years, people in the Black community have been complaining about the lack of Black teachers in the community. You know, they make a concerted effort to fill all of those jobs with white female teachers, and it's all by design. How do you keep a people down? You slow them down with bad teaching and never allow them to catch up to the other groups. But it's mildly successful. Not completely successful, because many of us are smart and many of us did learn and many of us do read. Okay. You know, all of the things they claim we don't do, we do. I know several teachers. I have quite a few teachers in my family. And many times you will talk to Black teachers, they will apply for teaching jobs within the towns they live in. They won't give it to them. They'll give those jobs to white females. And if Black people want to teach, they got to go outside of their town. That's how they got it all rigged up. It's a rigged up system, just like it's rigged up in many other ways in this country. When it comes down to education, education is heavily rigged in America, you know, and they have fought to keep this white female teacher up in the Black classrooms to keep it that way. But make no mistake, there's a lot of cheating going on in these schools that they claim are the good schools. A lot of cheating. A lot. I even remember there was a case when I graduated of them. It was some type of state test that we took, and several of the alleged good white schools got caught cheating. Teachers were giving them the answers on these tests, and they were not supposed to do that. And that's the only reason why it looked like they were scoring higher, because they were cheating. That was the reason why. So this came out on CNN, October 7th, 2019. Black men make up only 2% of teachers in the U.S. The question is why. We're not 2% of the population. So why would Black men be only 2% of the teachers in the U.S.? Ladies and gentlemen, this is just another form of racism and rigging in America. That's what it is. So a group named Called Me Sir wants to change that. Now, here we are in 2019 talking about having more Black men teaching in classrooms. I think that's a disgrace. And this is really a huge stain on America. Kyle Ferner entered his senior year of high school knowing what he wanted to do for a living, become a psychiatrist. But earlier this year, a fifth grade boy said something to the 18-year-old that changed his mind. Ferner wants to be a teacher now. Ferner was observing the boy's class as part of his school's teacher cadet program in South Carolina that he joined out of curiosity. Hey, you look like a rapper, Ferner recalled the boy saying. He said, I look like Lil Pump, a popular rapper of Hispanic descent. At the time, Ferner's hair was long and braided, like Lil Pump. But the fifth grader's comparison got Ferner thinking about a teaching career. In that instance, I knew this is something I can make a difference with, he said. More than likely, he's never had a teacher who looked like me. Yeah, in many cases, I come across a lot of Black children. They could probably name one, two Black teachers they had, and that's it. you know. And another thing that's real consistent, I notice many of them can't stand none of the teachers they have K through 12. They got all these, you know, they inundate us with all these white female teachers, and the average black person couldn't name too many that they said they really liked. We generally don't even like these damn teachers, and we know they don't like us too. You can feel it. You can feel it in the classroom. Black men make up the 2% of the teachers in the U.S., according to the National Center for Education Statistics. The same goes for Hispanic male teachers. Meanwhile, the student population is far more diverse, exactly, and getting more so, exactly. The white population in America, let's be real, is on the decline. So it's becoming less and less justifiable to keep over 73% white female teachers when you're a declining population. Makes no sense. It's going to be harder and harder for them to start justifying that stuff. Things are going to change, y'all. You just keep your eye on it. It's going to change. And when it changes, it will get better for our children once it does change. Okay. White enrollment in public schools fell from 61% in 2000 to 49% in 2015, according to the U.S. Department of Education. Again, all the more reason for there not to be all of these white female teachers in the black community. Less and less justifiable. Research shows that for minority children, having at least one teacher that looks like them is a key to their success, says Roy Jones, a professor of Clemson University College of Education. And that's true. They said if black children have at least one black teacher in their life, those students will usually more likely to graduate from school than black students that go through school and never have a black teacher. They have a more higher failure rate. Why? Because they are being sabotaged. Just understand that. He cites a Johns Hopkins University study found low-income black students with at least one black teacher in elementary school are significantly more likely to graduate high school, I told you, and consider attending college. Exactly, because that black teacher will inspire those black children. It's the kind of inspiration that they will never get from a white female teacher, and they don't. They don't. It's not only important that the teacher looks like and reflects the demographic of the students they're teaching, it's because of the experience and background, their ability to relate and identify with the child is critical. Exactly. White teachers cannot relate to black children like that. Okay, the first step is liking the black kids. If you don't like them, how are you going to relate to them? You won't. To address the problem, Jones founded the program Call Me Mister while teaching at Clemson. Mister stands for Mentor Instructing Students Towards Effective Role Models. I like that. It's a college program offered through 24 South Carolina universities that recruits minority men and major in education. So they try to drive the men to major in education to, you know, get more male, you know, black male teachers out there, which is definitely needed. It provides scholarships, extensive academic counseling, and summer teaching internships. Since the program began in 2000, it has expanded to college in 10 more states. Our misters come from the same environment, the same places and spaces that the children come from. That's why they relate so well and can bring them along, Jones said. The students also live together as a sort of brotherhood to encourage each other. on the path. And you know what? That was another thing I remember having a Black teacher. When I had a Black teacher back in elementary school, she would always tell us, look out for one another, you know, keep each other safe. If somebody needs help, reach out and help them. You know, they were very encouraging in that way. Never got that from teachers that did not look like me. They never gave us that message, ever. Jones cites others. Jones cites other high-paying professions as a major reason Black men don't become teachers. And that's right. You know, and that's another thing. Teaching, the pay should be a lot better. But in order for me to agree that the pay should be better, the education must improve first. Okay, I'm not willing to give more money to a teacher that's sabotaging the community. She don't deserve more money. In fact, she don't even deserve her position that she's in, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm not willing to give that kind of person more money. But somebody like this that want to get with the children in the community and encourage them and teach them, yeah, I would be more than willing to give them more money. But for me to agree to give more money as teaching stands today, no, they would have to make a lot of overhaul in education first. And these teachers would have to, I would make them pull their weight. You know, it would be about merit. So if they're not moving those students along like they're supposed to, no, you don't get no raise. No, no raise for you. You've got Black males going to college that, aside from athletics, are choosing to go into health profession, business, engineering, and social science. Yep. When it comes to college athletics, Jones says there's a much stronger pipeline of recruitment and support. Yeah, because that athlete is bringing in a lot of college money. They're making a lot of money for the college. That's why they heavily promote that. Not only money, but they get the tutoring, the counseling, their own separate dormitory. They eat well because of what their perceived value is, exactly. And while many minority students know about the resounding success of athletes from their neighborhoods, you'll never be able to touch or shake hands with LeBron James or Dak Prescott, but you can sure touch the hem of a mister in your classroom, Jones said. Guys are so dynamic. That's what changes the narrative and the perception of going into teaching as a vocation. Over the past 19 years, 275 men graduated from the program and received job offers. Jones said 95% are still working in the classroom as teachers, and the other 5% are principals or working in education leadership roles in South Carolina. Changing perceptions of a teacher. Ferner is now officially a call me Mr. Man. The freshman joined the program at College of Charleston. He plans to double major in elementary education and psychology. Good. He admits a salary was one of the reasons he didn't want to go into teaching initially. But there came a point. You can sit back and let issues go on, or you can be part of the solution. Exactly. That's a very progressive way of thinking. I can be part of the reform that brings higher wages to teachers, he said, once I realize that when I shift. You know, so he is saying, I can get into teaching and then I can try to push for higher pay for teachers. And that's really a good way of doing it, you know, especially getting on the inside. He thinks back on the little boy who changed his mind and the lesson he learned that day. Your image doesn't say who you are. You say who you are through your image. You know, this is a good story. and a sad story at the same time. Just think about all of the decades schooling has been in existence in America. And here we are in present day, 2019, and only 2% of the teachers out here are Black men. That's really sad. But ladies and gentlemen, this, like I said, is another sign of how badly rigged everything is in this crazy corrupt system. Never look for anything to be righteous or moral, because these folks just simply don't have it, and they're not going to get it at this point either. It is really up to us to make sure our kids get the education they need and get in front of Black teachers if it's possible. I know it's not always possible for everybody, but if you are in a situation to make that possible, make it happen. And homeschooling, that's always another option too. Please leave your comment and subscribe. Don't forget to hit on the notification bell, and I'll see you on the next video. Peace, family.
Okay, let me see if there's an echo. I don't know. All right. I don't need both. I only need one of these. No, wait a minute. On or off. Let me see if I can play something. Okay. Man, weird day. Okay. Let's see if we can sign off properly, and I haven't been able to do that. Okay. Let's see if we can get an audio.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008, because my divorce was in 2005, and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died, and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed, and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you just see
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was,